I'm going to call this meeting to order. Let the record reflect that it is 8:45. There's a quorum. Present are Representative Salmon, Representative Elkins, Co-Chair Thomas, and myself, Co-Chair Ledoux. Our agenda this morning is the confirmation of Governor Murkowski's Alaska Department of Fish and Game Commissioner appointment, Mikai Campbell. Commissioner Campbell, would you please step forward and identify yourself and make yourself available for questions.
Madam Chair, I got to go back to state chairs.
Okay.
We got to get that person turned off.
We may have to call you back, though, Jim.
Okay. Madam Chair, if I may, happy birthday. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Madam Chair, I'm Mikai Campbell, and I am here and available for any questions you may have.
All right. Well, let's start this out. Why do you want the job?
Madam Chair, I served in the department in Governor Hickel's term as special assistant, and then later after a stint in the governor's office as deputy commissioner. And during that time, I can say I've been blessed throughout my life to have a lot of good jobs, but I enjoyed that job more than any job that I've ever had. There was the ability, I think, to work day to day with a great group of people and hopefully try to make a difference across our state for the better.
Okay. What did you say that you did right after you were special assistant?
Well, my very brief chronology is I actually started working here in the legislature in 1980 as staff to the Senate Resources Committee, worked for approximately 9 years as staff, most of that time for Senator Sturgalewski. I then, in 1991, 5 months after the election, much to my surprise, received a call from Governor Hickel's administration asking me if I'd come in and consider going to work at the Department of Fish and Game. And with Senator Sturgalewski's blessing, I did that. So I served as special assistant. I was then, while special assistant, I was volunteered by my commissioner to go up to the governor's office and assist with subsistence and some other natural resource issues. While there, I became Pat Ryan's deputy chief of staff and served in that capacity until Pat left. At the time he left, I requested to go back to the department, went back as deputy commissioner under Commissioner Carl Rozier.
What was the hardest issue that you faced when you were working for the Hickel administration vis-a-vis fish and game?
Subsistence and wolves. Trying to work with all parties throughout the state to try to achieve some kind of solution where we could bring people of very different views together with some solutions that would work. It's an issue our state still wrestles with, and we're also still wrestling with wolves. One of the things that's been interesting for me is how many of the same issues that we dealt with then, with different twists, but we are still wrestling with. Though, to put that in perspective, last Friday I had a friend, Chuck Meacham, whose father had worked for Fish and Game back since the start of the department, brought in and gave to the department two big scrapbooks of clippings starting in 1959 on fish and game issues. And what was really amazing is when you go back and you look in 59 and 60 and 64, and they're wrestling with the same issues back then.
That always is interesting.
Yeah.
You can probably go back 100 years and find some of the same issues. Let the record reflect that Representative Kapsner and Representative Wilson has joined. Representative Salmon.
Yes, sir.
If you had to deal with subsistence again, what would you change in the process?
I have been part of attempts to resolve subsistence 1986 through the time I left, and I've worked on attempts having to do with constitutional amendments, having to do without constitutional amendments. I believe the situation that we have right now is we have federal management. I do think that there are a number of areas. You know, in 1990, what happened is the Federal Subsistence Board adopted the state game regulations for subsistence entirely. But since that time, there's been this wide divergence. Some of that has been reasoned. They've thought of it, and they've decided, no, we don't like the standard the state set. And they've made decisions to have different standards or different limits. But there's a whole bunch of things that have happened simply because either our board or their board, in slightly different cycles, the opportunities that are provided in the state subsistence law and the opportunities that are provided in the federal subsistence law are not markedly different. It's not greater opportunity one way or the other. But because they're slightly different, we have resulted in a real mess of regulations between the two state and federal governments that if you really want to be legal with all the laws, you better be prepared to take both your lawyer and your GPS with you when you go hunting or fishing. That really is ultimately is a disadvantage to the users, and we are going to try to work with the federal government to see if there's some way we can jointly work together to clean those up. Again, that's no diminishment of subsistence opportunity. That's not the issue. The issue is just can we make sure that folks deserve to be able to look at regulations and understand what the law tells them.
On that point, Madam Chair, I'm glad you brought up subsistence. You know, I wonder if you could even count how many special sessions and regular sessions you were involved.
There were a lot of them. I don't know. I was involved in every regular session and every special session from basically 86 when we first attempted. I participated in the rewrite of the law following the Madison decision through when I left government in 94. Several times, but been within one vote of a solution, and with one vote in a couple different options. I probably know as much about the legal parts of subsistence as most folks in Alaska. I've been involved in that, but the only thing I know for sure, unfortunately, is no one walks away from subsistence unwounded. But that doesn't mean we don't continue to need to deal with it.
You know, my constituents are actually quite pleased with federal management, but that's not to say that it's a perfect system. I think dual management is very complicated, especially when you're dealing with mobile species.
It is.
And I'm fortunate. I come from the green part of the state where it's all federal land, but I really have sympathy for the people from Kodiak where it's blue and green. And, you know, for land mammals, it's one set of rules, and then for fish, it's another set of rules. Mm-hmm. Can you put on the record exactly what kind of regulations you want changed in federal management? And is part of your plan to diminish the protections we have in ANILCA?
Yeah, excuse me. I'd like to say unequivocally, it is not part of the plan to diminish the protections under ANILCA. I'd like to get that firmly on the record first. But and we are on the record. But as I said before, there's a tremendous complexity of regulations in many cases that it's not. I don't think anybody would say there's significant difference in subsistence opportunity, but there are differences in, you know, a season may be off by 5 days or 10 days, or you know. There are a whole variety of things where they've just kind of come apart. There are some also, I will say, and I can give some specific examples, where, Red Creek Sheep, for instance, was closed to all users except those residents of Arctic Village for sheep for subsistence. That was about 10 years ago. Since that time, there's no record of any sheep being taken by anybody. I think, you know, if that's the case, we need to go and look. If there's not a subsistence use of those sheep, we ought to go and look and say, can we open it back up for wider access? Go ahead.
Is that there, Madam Chair, if I might, because there is no record, does that mean none have been taken? I mean, perhaps that's perhaps that's more of a reflection of the fact that Subsistence Division doesn't have the resources to get the data on paper.
It may be, and that's one of the things that I have wondered about. And, you know, one of the issues with subsistence is also always the issue of reporting and what are your records, how accurately do they reflect reality. But I will say in this case, because it's been of particular interest, the department has really tried to find out the people who would be reporting. It would be in their interest to report, to keep it, it's not something where it's against their interest to report. And by everything we've been able to find out, I mean, that's just one little example. But again, we're not talking about any diminishment of opportunity. What we're talking about is, are there places where you can have clarification for all users, and are there places where you may have the ability to increase opportunity for other users without any diminishment? And that's, again, a case-by-case specific. This is not an organic solution I'm talking about. You know, I think we're here and we're living with dual management. So the question is, can we do things within that to make it better for all parties?
Thank you.
Sure.
Any further questions? Representative Thomas.
Yes, Mackay, I was disappointed in the fish and game budget this year. I sat on the subcommittee for the budget subcommittee, and I guess the incremental increases that were put in there for salaries only, you know, HERS, TERS, whatever, and I just saw none for expansion of fisheries or development of fisheries and new fisheries in Southeast or anywhere in Alaska. Will you, as a commissioner, fight for the fish and game budget to be increased for new fisheries?
I will, and I thank you for asking that question. One of the things, as I've come back again from being gone over 10 years and stuff, that's been sort of a shock to me, is the department's pretty beaten down right now. It really is. And I knew that. I mean, that was in part one of my reasons that drove me to come back to this. I had a good job. This is not an issue of my coming back for 3 high years or money, or, I mean, financially it's a very dumb decision, but I think I think it's important. I really do think it's important for the state. You know, I started working here back in this building in 80, and at that time there were many, many commercial fishermen who were legislators. I mean, this body as a whole understood the importance of the economic engine that fish and wildlife are for this state. I find and say, you know, this is our fault, we need to do something about it. But that understanding in general is lacking. And one of the things that I hope to do with you all as the Fisheries Committee is both, you know, have you be overseers of our effort, tell us if we're doing a good or bad job and stuff, but also help us be ambassadors in this building for the importance of fish and wildlife to our state. I've already actually told Cheryl Frasca that I want to take her on a tour this summer, and I want to take her out to Bristol Bay and Unalaska and to other places in the state. I wish I could have had her at the sportsman show here in Anchorage a couple weeks ago, you know, to see, just to understand, we're a powerful economic engine. I really think Fish and Game Department can be a profit center for the state of Alaska, but we do have to have the resources to do that.
Representative Thomas,
just
go ahead.
Follow up comment to Mackay. I shrimp fishing, and there's some areas that, if you've been to Tanaki, that's considered to be one part of the bay, yet we fish up at the upper third, and we've been trying to get Fish and Game, because that area goes all the way through Tanaki and all the way to all over the place. I mean, it's a big area on the map, but 100% of the fishery is occurring in, up the upper end, and we're trying to get them to come in there, and they say they don't have it because they don't have people to go out and do the research for them. And that, the shrimp fishery, I think, is one that's underutilized because it's so vast and everybody concentrates in one or two bays. You know, Ketchikan is a good area too, but they can split some of these areas and call them Area 1A, Area 1B. And because they don't have funding, concerned how many other fisheries are there that are underutilized. I know the king crab fishery is, because we get calls from Petersburg Wrangell. They need the biologists. So these are just some ideas that we threw out. I tried to get it in the budget, but that was on finance. But we did recommend it, and it didn't get in there. So
I appreciate that. I think, unfortunately, throughout our state, we have numerous examples of underutilized fisheries, and that's a lost economic opportunity to the state. One thing also about the economic opportunity that fish and wildlife provide for our state, I'm particularly trying to reach out and work with rail belt legislators, because I don't think they sort of understand the value it brings there. But the hardest type of economic development for our state to develop is economic opportunities in rural Alaska. And again, both fish and wildlife can provide multiple opportunities for economic base in rural Alaska that benefit our state entirely, because anything that happens out there is also going to benefit, you know, the rail belt as it happens.
Representative Sam,
could I interject, please? Because
go ahead.
Just for the record, right now the governor is planning on unveiling his energy action task force thing, and in our meeting yesterday, I told him I'd be there if he didn't have it at 10:30. It was at 10:30, but since that's our floor session, he rearranged it till 9. Are you going to be in resources, or have you already been to resources?
I have not been in resources yet. I'll be there, and one of the things also, I think you and I have an appointment scheduled, because I wanted to come see you personally as well. So.
Okay. A lot of the questions I have, I actually want on the record. So perhaps I'll talk to you more during resources committee. But I just wanted... Thank you, Representative Salmon, for letting me interject. And if I may be excused.
You can be excused.
Okay. Are you going to sign the paper anyway? Because we need four to go move it forward in case somebody leaves.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead
and move, or do we have more questions?
We have more questions. No. You have someplace else to go to.
Oh. I know Representative Salmon won't have another opportunity to get...
Nor
Commissioner Campbell on the record.
Well, you can sign that paper and leave. We're not going to hold them. But we would like to ask questions.
Well, I'll stay as long as I can. Yeah.
Okay. You can be excused.
Okay, thank you. We'd love to have you with us.
We know. Just leave us here.
Okay.
Woody? Look at that look.
We won't lock the door and refuse to let you out,
Mary. We just won't support what they're doing because they don't want us there.
Also, the governor does.
Okay, you'll understand.
Did you have another question, Representative?
The question I have is the question, you're saying something about the rule, how it could affect the economic of rule. Could you give me an example of that?
Absolutely. If it's all right, I'll give you several different examples. One is, to the extent that we can find underutilized fisheries and develop those or just build up existing fisheries, most all of those occur in rural parts of the state. And so to the extent that that gives economic opportunity for the fishermen who live there, to the extent that fish are landed there, if they are in areas that have raw fish tax, it provides funds to the local economy. But and I know this is the Fisheries Committee focused on primarily commercial fishing, but I'd also, if I could, like to expand on other opportunities. I think that it is important that more and more various in particular, village corporations and others have weighed and said, we think we see some opportunities either through sport fishing or sport hunting, and in ways that we can have control over that will be good for our areas, but we can also have some control over and offer economic opportunities right there. Frankly, the furthest flung example that I've heard of is we recently had folks on Little Diomede request John Lyman, who's one of our information officers funded by federal sport fish funds, to come up, and they were going to gather together about 200 folks there who are interested in learning about sport fishing and learning to tie flies. And one of the interesting twists in this is in fly tying, polar bear hair was this material that, you know, has been not available for years and years and years, and is goes for huge amounts. Previously legal polar bear hair, and there's extensive trails, and now it's used mainly in sort of display flies and things. The villagers there can legally tie flies with polar bear hair, and John was working them with tying flies and polar bear hair and baleen and some other things that they can access and use that are not available, that can provide a really healthy cottage industry that has a worldwide audience, but brings funds right there in a way that doesn't adversely affect their way of life. I mean, there's just a ton of things. I want, you know, in terms of wildlife, you know, we have wonderful scenery, but I don't think we'd have very many tourists who would come up if we didn't have our wildlife. I'd like to see every tourist who go home with a taste for Alaska seafood, where it's the kind of thing where they want to invite people over and say, taste this, you know, we got it, this is what we had up in Alaska. I want to work on that kind of thing. It's, I can get kind of wound up and go on with examples for a long time, but if you would.
Representative Thomas?
Thank you. I have a lifetime permit in Glacier Bay that I have to renew every 5 years. Figure that one out. My concern, and I don't like the fact that we're being booted out of Glacier Bay, or my kids, you know, they fish with me, and I just, I know the administration doesn't have a position on here, but I'd like you to consider, and I wrote a letter to Senator Stevens requesting they change the Magnuson Act to include the lifetime permit being given to the children if they're fishing with you on board, if they show a history, because I think it's a halibut fishery that I participate in there, and it's a good place to go in and get out of the weather when you, for a smaller boat, and plus it's access to Glacier Bay that I'm concerned. I feel like I'm being displaced before cruise ships in there, and I've been in there 20-some years, almost 30 years, and, you know, a lifetime permit. Once they're done, once you die, it's it, and I think that I don't like the position anyway of closing the bay completely to commercial access.
Yeah. I strongly agree with you. What happened in Glacier Bay was just flat wrong, in my opinion. I mean, you know, it was, you know, we, the Park Service, have this, but we want to keep Alaskans out. They sort of view it as their terrarium, and we're the, you know, somehow pests or insects that have gotten in there and stuff. I will say that one of the things actually I'm pleased about is we have a much better leadership of the Park Service now than back when I was there, and I think we have some room to work. Marcia's coming down actually next week, and I'll be talking with her, and I would be more than happy to look at possibilities that we might advance on lifetime permits.
Please hand them down to the family if they're active.
Absolutely.
Representative Salmon.
I have another question about the wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Over on the McGrath area. What's your feeling on the taking of wolves for the purpose of saving moose, I guess?
As you're aware, the department has a number of active predator control programs, and I think, to me, this was most eloquently put, I was up at the Board of Game a couple weeks ago, before I was appointed, but up in Anchorage, and there was a fellow up there who actually is the person who has taken probably the majority of wolves that have been taken this year. He's, you know, I mean, he's over half of Alaska's wolf control program as a private citizen. But in his testimony, he said, you know, he said, it's very important for me to have wolves and bears and other predators be part of our entire ecosystem. But what has happened, he said, in the previous 8 years, things had gotten so out of whack that we had many moose and caribou populations that were severely depressed. As you're aware, wolves have the ability, because they're basically omnivorous, I mean, they can eat anything, to target a particular moose population or a caribou population, to ride it down in a way where, as it goes down, you know, into what we call a predator pit, a biological predator pit, but they're continuing to supplement their diet with other sources of food, everything from, you know, hares, to anything else, that you don't have the cycle you do with like snowshoe hare and lynx. You know, when the snowshoe hare crash, the lynx crash. Well, the wolves can keep very healthy populations while they ride a prey population like moose right down. So there are places. I don't think there's anything inconsistent to say we value the role of wolves and bears in Alaska. We wouldn't want to lose them. But there are definitely places and times where, for the sake of the other predators in the equation, which is us, the Alaskans, we need to appropriately step in and reduce wolf numbers. And so I do support in those cases doing it.
Representative Thomas?
Kind of following up the bear issue, same thing. Haines has more bear than moose now. It used to be the other way around. But so we sit there in the local advisory board. I sat in one meeting, and it was just a couple of months ago, and they had this argument with Fish and Game. And Fish and Game, I thought, was very rude about it until I found out who I was, and I didn't want them to, you know, freak them out or anything. And I said, well, that was, your attitude was bad. And they got a little snotty, but I said, to tell the local game guides that they don't know what they're doing because they're fishing game. These guys live in the woods in Haines all year round, and
mm-hmm.
They were trying to excuse me, tell them that the bear population was not as high as they thought, and the bear moose population was better. And when I was born and raised in Haines, and you can go up the highway and see 15 moose along the highway, they have an excuse that saying the ground has risen and there's no feed, and also they're starving. But at the same time, growing up, there was 450 moose, and they have that on record, and only about 250 bear. Now it's flip-flop the other way. You got 450 bear, estimated less than 250 moose. And but they, you know, so there's a conflict, and right in within the department, and we have a bear lady I call. I'll be nice to her that is up there and puts in her controls. And at the rate that she's harvesting the bear, you have an increase of 30% a year of bear. She's only harvesting 5%, and at the rate that they're producing, you have a 30% overall gain in the population. So you're not controlling them; you're letting them go beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we'll be talking about that sometime, or you can ask the guys up there, the local fish and game people.
Okay. There were several points there, and I want to respond to a couple of them. First off, I will look into I'm not familiar with the specific situation in Haines, and I will look into that and try to find that out. And bears are, you know, very substantial predators of both moose and caribou, depending on the location. One of the good things is they're more susceptible to control through loosening of simply hunting seasons, as opposed to having to go in, us going in and doing a program. Both because they're easier to hunt and they reproduce more slowly. One of the things that does require, though, is for us to have adequate funds to do the research to, you know, basically know what we have. What I don't want to do is get into court and lose in court with some of our programs in a decision that would seriously shut down statewide efforts to do this. One other point, though, that you raised, and it is something that's important to me. You mentioned the Fish and Game employees' attitude, and we have in our department, I think we have lots and lots of great employees. They're terrific, but I also am very aware that they are products of, they've gone through, you know, fishery management or wildlife management schools and graduate courses and everything, and they may be great on the biology, but somewhere in there they never got a course on customer relations.
Exactly.
And maybe it's because I spent my last 10 years running my own businesses and, you know, and doing well at it. But, you know, that's important. And frankly, all Alaskans, you all are our customers. And I think we'd have to be able to respond to you all and keep, you know, make our customers happy. Or ultimately, you know, what's happened to the department, you know, kind of shows the problem. So one of the things that I've already talked to the directors about, and I'm going to be talking throughout the department about, is how we treat and interact with our customers. You know, it doesn't mean we always do what they want. We can't do that because everybody wants things in different directions, but it does mean we can be dealing with people in a friendly, courteous, and above all, square way, so no one ever feels they weren't given full truth or that feels that they were misled.
You can do it. Going back to moose again,
yes,
for a second. I don't really know that much about moose from Kodiak, but I know the area that I represent around Eliamna, Nondalton, etc. They've got a big moose population there, or at least they like to have a big moose population there when it's not being decimated by the wolves. But one of the things that I kept hearing all last year when I was going out was that Fish and Game was injecting some sort of dye into the moose population in order to be counting the moose population, but this was making it unfit for eating. And I heard that from a number of people. Do you know anything about that?
I don't know anything about that. I'm going to find out, but it sounds very bizarre. I will definitely look into it, and I will find out for sure. You know the term urban myth? I think we may have a rural myth in this case, but I will find out.
Well, I heard it from the village, not only from one person, but one of the people that I did hear it from was the one of the public health people,
yeah,
over in one of the villages.
The only thing that I'm aware that the department ever injects moose with is if we have to move a problem moose in an urban area. One, we dart it, you know, to make it go sleep, and there are chemicals there. And then two, it's given drugs to wake it back up. And there are those chemicals can make a moose unfit to eat for a short period of time. And one of the things that we do in our program and moving it is making sure that we're not going to put the moose but right out where somebody might immediately take it. You know, one of the things we question is, well, we have this darted moose, why don't we just let somebody harvest it, you know, as it wakes up. We do have procedures, very strict procedures, to make sure that that moose is not going to be harvested during the time that those chemicals might be in its body. But
30 days, I can't remember.
It's, I believe, shorter than that, but I'll find out. I'll find out. But just trying to sort of wrap my mind around the science of why we would dye moose. Now, I've often wished the deer over in Admiralty kind of came in day glow orange. I would have much greater success. But
one last question. Go ahead.
Just one more. Processors' shares. Do you support the idea that processors should get shares of any of the resources, fishery resources in Alaska?
I don't know yet. And in all fairness, rationalization is a very tough issue. We are working our way through it. You know, I'm certainly aware of both the I was around and involved in the original Halibut IFQ decisions, and when Halibut IFQs were set up and all of that. I was gone when processor shares happened in the Bering, but I'm working on it. I will get back to you with a definitive answer.
Just a comment on, since you brought up IFQs, I was not a supporter of IFQs because I was one of the long-term fishermen who, and actually in the end, it probably stopped the bleeding, but I'd fished for 15 years before the Derby days came along, and I put in a significant amount of poundage of halibut, and then each year when it got into the competition, and all of a sudden, where I was by myself, I had 8 boats lined up to make the set because they knew where I'd been fishing because I've been there 15 years.
Right.
Set me down, set all around me. And anyway, I went from 60,000 pounds a year. I averaged 15 at the end. And, you know, they just put us out of business, so just about. So it was a good thing, but it wasn't a good thing.
There are definitely pros and cons, and I do want, you know, it also had substantial disadvantages for crew members. I mean, one of the big arguments back then was, do you base it simply on ownership or do you base it on participation? I think that was a real issue. Anyway, there were a lot of...
I went from 3 to 2, so
yeah.
I don't have to have 3 people on board.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on Senate Bill 113?
We are actively working on that right now, and that is tied up in this whole process processor share issues and stuff, and we will, I'm not trying to dodge it, but we're just actively developing, so we will get that to you here in the very near future of what the department's position is.
Representative Salmon, did you have a question?
Sooner or later, the state is going to be faced with the idea that there's a lot of outside hunters coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be a point where the limit of resources that they're coming up here for is going to be, you know, jeopardized. You have, does the fishing game, or how do you feel about, you know, controlling that, that influx of coming in to take our resources?
Several steps. First off, under both state law and federal law, subsistence use of those resources has a clear priority, you know, absolutely. The next step, if there is additional resource that is available over and above the needs of subsistence use, then that needs to go to resident hunters. And then, under state law, if there is additional resource available, and only when there's additional resource available, then I think you have an adequate supply for out-of-state hunters. But you know, I think there's a clear hierarchy there of uses of those resources, and I think that's firmly established in both law and in department policy.
Go ahead.
So what would, say, for an example of moose, what population, what the population has to be before they enforce that?
The population of moose is going to vary location by location in relation to the local population, you know, to the subsistence needs. What you do is you look at the local, how many local subsistence users there are and what their needs are, and then after that you look at how many resident hunters tend to use the hunt, and it varies for every location. I'm afraid I can't give you an overall answer. I'm just saying you have to look at it, you know, and it's one of the things the boards do. They look at each different hunt by game unit and game subunit and make those decisions. Can I come back to 113 for 1 second? Because I do want to clarify something.
Go ahead.
My hesitancy right now is based on simply, I've been drinking out of the fire hose here for the last week and a half or so since I've been on board, and I have not had the appropriate time to get fully knowledgeable about 113. I do know the department is on record in support of 113, and I didn't want to dilute that in any way. And I will be also coming up fully to speed and looking at all of that and getting back to you.
Thank you. Further questions?
Thank you for hanging in.
All right. Well, if we have no further questions, then I guess we will be moving this nomination. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that we pass on Mackay Campbell's name to a joint session for consideration as Commissioner of Fish at the Department of Fish and Game with individual recommendations.
Hearing no objections, it's done.
Thank you very much.
All right. There being no further business, the meeting's adjourned at 9:25.